I bet you if you took 5 minutes and just wrote down problems that you have solved since January 1 of this year, you'd probably come up with about 6 without even blinking an eye.
What's up, gang? Welcome back to Future Proof. I am your host, Bill Sheridan, and we've got a good one for you this week. My guest is Peter Margaritis, a fellow podcaster, a CPA, a stand-up comedian. Yep, funny guy. He's one of those funny guys. And he's also a friend, and he's spreading an important message among the accounting and finance community. He says, one of the most important roles we'll play going forward is to competently communicate financial information, to tell stories behind the numbers in a way that creates shared understanding, in a way that communicates value, and in a way that entertains. And he's written a new book with tips on how to do that. So this is going to be a fascinating conversation. We'll get to that in just a minute. First, here's what caught my eye this week. If you recall, my guest a couple of weeks ago was Rick Richardson. He's a tech futurist of sorts. And we talked about the technology trends that CPAs really need to watch, the ones with the most traction, so to speak. So Rick says one of them is voice-enabled technology, you know, the stuff that makes it possible for us to search online or otherwise get stuff done just by using our voices. And this stuff has been gaining traction for a while now, thanks to devices like Amazon's Echo, Google Home, or Apple's HomePod. Just 0.3%, sorry, make that 0.03% of the population had one of those devices in 2014. Last year, that number had grown to 16%. And by 2023, experts predict 63% of U.S. homes will have a device like that. So voice is going to quickly take a place at the center of everything we do. And it's no surprise, really, that the big tech players, specifically Amazon, Apple, Google, they're all working on some high-priority projects that Fast Company reporter Peter Burrows is calling hearables. Kind of like wearable technology, except this stuff all centers on speech and speech recognition. So here's how Burrows puts it in his Fast Company article. He writes, all three, Apple, Amazon, Google, are working on products that combine the utility of the hearing aid with the entertainment value of a pair of high-end headphones and potentially much more. Since all three have announced plans to get into healthcare, they could easily add fitness and health monitoring sensors for everything from counting steps to measuring oxygen saturation. And while that may take years to happen, none of those three want to be left behind should it become possible to create a general purpose in-ear computer that allows consumers to leave their phone in the desk drawer. So this type of interaction with our devices will be way less conspicuous than, you know, looking down at a screen all the time. And it'll be way safer to use too, say when driving. But that's only the start. Experts say these devices have the potential to be able to detect more than just voices. They could potentially tell which direction you're facing, or in other words, what you're looking at, and then deliver ads to you based on what you're seeing. So here's what Burrow says again in his Fast Company article. He says, a Cambridge, UK-based startup called Audio Analytic is already licensing the ability for a device to recognize the sound of a window breaking or a baby crying. So at this rate, it won't be long before Amazon can send you ads for Robitussin when it hears you cough. Creepy? Yeah, maybe, but there's no denying we're taking steps down this path, and it's going to be really interesting to see how the way we interact with our devices evolves over time. Rick Richardson, again, he says he believes typing on a keyboard will eventually go the way of DOS, right? Remember disk operating systems? Yeah, I barely remember that myself, but that's going to, that's going to impact how we collect and deliver financial information ultimately, which brings me right back to my next guest, Peter Margaritis. First, the formalities. Peter, past chair of the Ohio Society of CPAs and a thought leader with the Business Learning Institute. He's also a member of the National Speakers Association and is president of the Ohio chapter of the National Speakers Association. So he knows of what he speaks in this area. So I mean, here's the thing. We're living in a time when machines are doing more and more of our transactional work, which means our value lies in our ability to add insights to the data, to tell the stories behind the numbers and help our clients make sense of it all. And that means we have to become pretty good storytellers. And Peter has written a book about all this. It's called Taking the Numb Out of Numbers, Explaining and Presenting Financial Information with Confidence and Clarity. And he, being a stand-up comic, says there's a good bit of stand-up comedy embedded in all this. Good financial communicators learn to do all the things that good comedians do. They control their anxieties, for example. They learn to craft their stories, and they connect with their audiences. So Peter and I talked about all of that, all about the parallels between comedy and finance, of all things, and how those similarities can bring the numbers to life. And it was a fun conversation. So here's Peter Margaritis. So this is a good distraction for you and I from baseball season.
Yes.
My fellow Cincinnati Reds fan. Boy, that's been a brutal first part of the year. But so my question for you is, how did you get started in stand-up? You are, in fact, the second CPA that I know who actually does stand-up. I interviewed Greg Kite for this podcast a little while ago. Yeah. It's a weird kind of subculture in the CPA world, I guess, the stand-up comedians. So how did that all get started for you?
Oh, I was in grad. Actually, when I was living in Florida, the Showtime was looking for the funniest comedian, who was an amateur. So I went up and tried out for it, and I stunk pretty bad. And then when I left Florida, went to Cleveland, and when I was in graduate school, I wanted to try it. So I started going to open mic nights around Cleveland at It's Comedy Club and a few others. And then I tried out at the, I think it's the Funny Bone up in Cleveland, and got to do a set around Thanksgiving. And the guy, when I finished trying out, he goes, "You know, you sound like this guy. Have you ever heard of a guy named Jeff Foxworthy?" And this is when Jeff was just kind of getting big. And he goes, because I was doing a lot of Southern humor, stuff that I knew. And I've just always found it a lot of fun, extremely challenging. I don't do as much of it now because I don't like being out that late at night. Actually, it's way past my bedtime. But I do try to incorporate the humor in what I do professionally in training classes and things along those lines.
Do you remember, like, the first time you were up on stage and it felt like you just killed it, and what that felt like? What was the feeling that you got from something like that?
When people ask me that question, I ask them this question: do you know what the difference between stand-up comedy and heroin is?
No.
You can quit heroin. I know exactly where I was, and this was a huge risk. I was working on Victoria's Secret catalog at the time, and they were doing their semi-annual, I believe, manager retreat. And it was here in Columbus, and somebody came up to me about a month or two prior and said, "Hey, why don't you open up our show? We'll keep it a big secret. Why don't you come out and do about 10 minutes of comedy?" We had the president, the CFO, senior management, and I wasn't even, I think I was maybe a manager at that time. And but 2 or 3 days before, I said, "Well, I'm either going to keep my job or I'm going to lose it." And I came out and did 10 minutes, and they were howling. Awesome. I mean, tears were coming out of their eyes. So yeah, that belly laugh is something that I always strive for. And it's so rare, especially when you don't do it that much.
Yeah. I mean, I do, and I do a fair amount of public speaking, and I'm just now starting to feel almost comfortable doing it. And yet the idea of trying stand-up absolutely freaking terrifies me. I mean, in my mind, there's something fundamentally different about, like, delivering information or insights and trying to make people laugh. And that the latter just is something that frightens the heck out of me.
I talked to a headliner who's now a motivational speaker. He used to headline at Rodney Dangerfield's place in New York. And I asked, his name is Steve Rizzo. And I was talking to him one day and told him that I was thinking about getting back into stand-up and get his thoughts. And he said, "Pete, you know what? People's biggest fear is public speaking. Those who speak like we do, keynotes and stuff, our biggest fear is comedy, doing stand-up."
Yeah.
So if you can continue to do it and try it, then you're at the pinnacle of the pinnacle.
Yep. So what I think is really interesting about what you do is you've actually drawn some parallels between stand-up and the kind of speaking that accounting and finance folks actually deliver, namely this idea of explaining financial information, of kind of telling the story behind the numbers. And I guess my question is, what on earth could possibly tie those two things together?
Well, we have sat through a number of conferences or seminars on very technical topics. And usually it comes across from the facilitator very dry, very dull, very kind of boring. There's not that energy there.
Yeah.
And I didn't get into this profession until I was 30 years old. I'm Greek. I should be in a restaurant right now. And most of my early life through college and even after college, I was in that role. And when I started sitting in these CPE classes and even through the university and stuff, there's got to be a better way. And what's a better way than trying to make the class laugh? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not up to telling jokes like a priest, a rabbi, and Bill Clinton walk into a bar. I did not walk into that bar, I swear. But if we can find ways to make that them laugh, they will remember. And really, this is about, and I realized this a few years ago, when I'm up there delivering information, this is not about me. This right. is all about the audience.
Yep.
We sit there and you were probably brought the same way I was. We would sit through these seminars and, well, we must have to give all the numbers, all the facts, all the figures, all the data, and no pictures on the slides, and just data, data, data.
Yep.
And data is boring.
Right, right.
And we don't remember. And the audience doesn't remember. And if I'm supposed to be doing my job, and I can make people laugh and make people remember and keep them engaged, then when they leave, they can act on what I'm trying to deliver.
Right. There's a book that I actually just got done reading. It was recommended to me by someone in another part of my life, but it's called Do You Talk Funny? And it was written by David Nihil, subtitled 7 Comedy Habits to become a better and funnier public speaker. Yes, folks, you can't see this, but he's holding up a copy of the book right now. I thought it was a great book, and I've started making lists of stories and stuff like they recommend in the book that you can start incorporating into whenever you're in front of a group of folks. But one of the things he said in there kind of stuck with me, and that's this notion that you alluded to it. If you can make them laugh at something, they're much more likely to remember you and have a good impression of you as a speaker and the information that you deliver than if you don't, which I thought was I can definitely see how that would be the case, you know?
Actually, have you read the book by John Medina called Brain Rules?
No, I have not.
He's a neuroscientist, but he wrote this where everybody could get an understanding of the brain. Uh-huh. And he talks about, he calls it post-it notes, these emotionally charged events. When we have these emotionally charged events, we remember them. And so it's like putting a post-it note on our brain. And humor is an emotionally charged event.
Right.
It helps them remember. I mean, I bet you I could ask you, this isn't humorous, but to demonstrate an emotionally charged event, you can tell me exactly where you were and what you were doing on September 11th, 2001.
Sure.
Yeah. Emotionally charged event.
Yep.
But you can't tell me what you were doing on September 1, 2000.
No. I couldn't. Yes, yeah. So it's the same type of notion. So that's all just kind of a nice lead in to talk a little bit about your new book, Taking the Numb Out of the Numbers. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
This is your second book?
This is my second book, yes.
That's great. Well, congratulations on that. So that's my question. What are some of the secrets to, as you call it, taking the numb out of the numbers and telling the story behind those numbers and making them truly interesting?
Well, you said the key word. Where's the story? Mm-hmm. There's a story there. Now, a couple ways to define a story. One, great stories have a hero and a villain, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Superman, Batman, we hear all that. So let's take that concept and go, okay, well, let's look at the villain as a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we are the ones who solve that problem. We're the hero.
That's interesting. Okay.
So if we can look at these issues that we, these problems that we solve for our organizations, for our clients, for whomever, if we could take a moment and just write that down, what it was, how I solved it,
yep,
we can build a story from that. And also all good stories, everything's going la, 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 and something happens. Mm-hmm. There's that pivot, that movement. And then things get kind of ratcheted up, ratcheted up, ratcheted up. And usually at the end, the hero wins. Mm-hmm. So when I talk to folks about this, it's like, I bet you if you took 5 minutes and just wrote down problems that you have solved since January 1 of this year, you'd probably come up without six without even blinking an eye. Mm-hmm. Those are six stories.
Yeah.
The other piece of it is when telling a story, it's not a deposition. You're not going line for line, detail for detail, but you're looking at the story and go, what's the issue here? How can I put it in a context or use some analogy that will help the person gain an understanding?
Okay.
And one of the ways that I've been able to do this is through the use of a dollar bill.
Okay. Explain.
Well, if you think about most non-accounting types, they have some understanding of the income statement, but they have no clue what the balance sheet does or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But when we're, so I can still picture when I was at Victoria's Secret Catalog, the CFO was delivering the quarterly highlights, financial highlights, and everybody was just, I don't even think we had cell phones, it just bored out of their minds because it was data, data, data.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were 13% and talking millions and billions of dollars, yada, yada, yada. And I said, well, thinking about this, I said, I don't know about you, but I've never seen $1 billion.
Right.
So most people can't relate to that, but everybody can relate to a dollar bill. And I use the example of Delta Airlines. I pretend I'm the CFO of Delta Airlines. And I go, you know, for every dollar our passengers give us for the privilege to fly on our plane, 22 cents of that dollar, and I mark about 22% of that, goes to payroll costs. Mm-hmm. After that, 17 cents of every dollar goes to something extremely important called fuel, because without fuel, we can't fly.
Right.
And another 10 cents goes to regional carriers. And we had a great year this year, and 7 cents we had to pay to Uncle Sam.
Yep.
And then we got this big bucket of other 32 cents. And so most of that dollar bill has now been covered up. But you know what? We got to keep 12 cents out of every dollar. Now think about that. And then think about the number of dollars we get. Mm-hmm. I have found that really tells part of the company's story in a manner that it puts it in context that everybody in that room gets.
That's a great kind of visual analogy. I mean, you know, you can see it in your mind. And that's, I think, the point, right?
Right. And that's part of this book is I do talk about data visualization. Data visualization by itself isn't the story. Data visualization is the aid to communicating that story.
Right.
And I was presenting this. This book came out of that seminar that I do called Financial Storytelling. And I was doing this in Nebraska. And this one, I got an email the next day from this one of the attendees, and she said, it was the best CPE she's ever taken because she never answered one email. She paid attention to the whole thing.
See, you'd done something there. Yeah.
And she started asking me, like, are there templates or anything like this? And I said, they're not really, I haven't seen any, I haven't developed any. However, if you'd be willing to be part of my book, I'd be happy to coach you on this stuff.
Oh, cool.
And I did. And because she sent me, you know, she goes, I'm a CFO. I'm all about my spreadsheets. I can make people nauseous looking at my spreadsheets. I get all this information. And we talked about the dollar bill.
Yeah.
Well, she took it and put her own spin on it. Very nice. But she said that everybody came up to her afterwards and said, that was the best presentation you ever gave.
Wow.
We absolutely understand it. We can't wait till the next time because you put it in a context. And she works for an IT company out in Nebraska.
That's fantastic. And that might actually just be the answer to my next question. But, you know, there's still going to be people out there and a lot of them work in this profession, who would say to that, you know, I mean, who cares how I deliver it as long as I deliver the information?
You just said the magic, you just said the word. I deliver. So this, the presentation is not about you. The presentation is about the audience.
Right.
And like I said, we've all been there. We've, you know, we remember, we've felt that pain being that audience member. I tell people when I do this, I said, remember how that felt when you were sitting there through an 8-hour tax class or an 8-hour audience class and the instructor wasn't engaging at all. Next time you do a presentation, do the exact opposite of it. Because it's about them,
right?
Not about the presenter.
Not what you're giving them, but what they can walk away with.
Exactly.
So this strikes me, Pete, as a skill that CPAs are increasingly going to need to remain relevant going forward. I mean, we've taken really hard looks at the skills that this profession is going to need in order to remain relevant and become future ready. We being, you know, the folks at the Business Learning Institute, and every model we've looked at, communication is one of those skills. I mean, in essence, we're talking about a future ready skill here.
It is. And it's very much a future ready skill for communication and under that umbrella of leadership. Mm-hmm. When we talk about taking the numb out of numbers, I'll give you another example. I did a day and a half workshop for a group of firms here in Ohio. And I started off by saying, don't tell me about you. Tell me about your firm. Mm-hmm. This is what I got. We got X amount of partners. We've been in business for X amount of years. We've invested in it. They all kind of said the same thing. And at the end, I said, please don't take offense, but who really cares? You didn't tell me anything to make me want to pick you. You just gave me data, information. Think about what the passion there. What do you do? Why do you do it? And the next day, this one gentleman, he had a firm and it was half personal finance, financial planning and accounting. And he's the planning guy. And I said, why do you love this so much? He says, Pete, let me tell you. One day I received a call from a client's wife. And she was in tears. She informed me that her husband had just passed. And he was the type who didn't share financial information with her. And she's one, heartbroken because her husband passed. Two, scared to death because she has absolutely no idea anything about their financial plan or anything. And he said, I stopped. I said, I'm on my way over now. Cleared his counter. Spent a day and a half with her.
Wow.
In order to get her comfortable. And everybody in that room, we were starting to well up. I mean, you could see the water in everybody's eyes. And I looked at Joel and I said, that's what I'm talking about. Next time somebody asks you about your firm, what you do, you tell them that story.
Yeah.
Because that is emotion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that old Simon Sinek mantra, you know, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it.
Do it. That's right. Simon Sinek.
Yep.
Starts with why.
So where do we start? I mean, how can someone, you know, like me, who's terrified of this type of stuff, learn to apply some of Comedy's lessons to what we do every day?
Well, my first thing is to say, after you've built your presentation, and if you're looking at it and it has no pictures in it that relate to what you're talking about, you need pictures. Mm-hmm. Also, if there's more bullet points on the slide than there was in the St. Valentine's Day massacre, if you've got every word that you want to say on that slide, then you're doing it because you don't have the time to invest.
Right.
Typically what I hear. Yep. There's a professor of psychiatry at Michigan State University and a past president of the National Speakers Association Board of Directors, John Molitor, who came to our chapter and was talking to us how PowerPoint and the brain react to each other. And when we see all that data, all that information, no picture on the slide, it just overwhelms our brain. And we just don't take, and then when we're speaking, we're given data, we're not, and with no emotion, data's boring. It's not registering.
Yeah.
And his thought was, his theory was, it works. The right side of the brain controls the left side of the body, and the left side of the body controls the right side, left side of the brain controls the right side of the body. He said, so when you design a presentation, put the picture on the slide on the left-hand part of the slide, because now that connects with the right hemisphere. And the data and the words on the right side, so it connects with the left. So picture on the left, data on the right, one idea, few words, one picture.
Very interesting.
I had been moving in this direction. Actually, I did a ANA update back, I think it was back in 2015, for the Ohio Society of CPAs, their Cleveland accounting show. And I sent them all the detailed information. So when I started my presentation, I went, just so you know, you've got all the detail. I have 10 slides up here. Yep. And by the way, 8 of them only have a picture. I didn't put any words, just a picture.
Right.
And I can't tell how many people came up to me afterwards and said, that was incredible.
Yeah.
I watched you the whole time. I listened to you the whole time. I wasn't trying to multitask or anything because you were keeping my attention. Mm-hmm. You were drowning us with data. You were talking about this. And you have to know your topic and your subject inside out, upside down, in order to have that comfort level. And sure. I've seen you speak. You do a great job up there.
You were kind of one of the ones that inspired me to do that. There was another one, a gentleman that I saw speak by the name of Emmanuel Gobiot. He's a kind of a leadership expert and was talking about leadership at a conference I was at. And that was one thing that I noticed was all his slides had just a picture on it. No words, but you know, he knew his material well enough to know that picture triggered this story and help him make this point. And I thought, you know, that was a really impactful presentation. And what if I could do something like that? So I've been trying to do that. And it is difficult. And it does require a certain level of expertise and a certain level of, you know, hard work, just getting familiar with your topic in order to be able to do that. But the payoff is great when you can just sit up, you know, stand up there in front of the room without any notes and just kind of tell stories and talk to people. Those are the presentations that really make an impact on me, not somebody up there reading bullet points off a PowerPoint like you were talking about.
Right. We've turned PowerPoint into a crutch.
Yeah.
And not just in our profession, in so many professions. And people go, oh my God, we're going to have another PowerPoint presentation. I'll just blow my brains out right now. But yep. Then when you present it in a way that, wow. And, you know, you use pictures. There's a couple of times I'm trying to make a point. I know there's a movie clip that would make that point for me. So I'll use that movie clip. There's some humor right there because they're usually laughing along those lines. I'll tell a story. I'll embellish a little bit. But like I said, I'm not giving a deposition.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to convey the message and hit some emotional buttons in there, those emotionally charged events, so people will remember.
Sure. Sure. Podcaster to podcaster, who's been your most memorable guest so far? Who just kind of really made a big impact on you when you sat down and talked to him?
Well, I had this one guy on twice. Well, two of on twice, Bill Sheridan and Tom Hood.
Now, yeah, I knew you were going to say that, but that can't be the answer to the question. So, I mean, really though, I mean, like who just came in and blew you away with insights and.
Oh my God. I'm at like 105 episodes and I just rebranded it. I've had so many great guests. Annie Cantarace.
Yeah.
Just absolutely. If I had to say one person, she blew me away. Greg Cantarace's daughter. She's in Chicago. She's works in a Fortune, I think, 500 company.
So, Greg, just real quick background. Greg Cantarace, one of our Business Learning Institute thought leaders, highly sought after thought leader, just a very engaging speaker. I've never had a chance to meet his daughter, so this is interesting.
Well, I was interviewing Greg, and he's got a great story about riding his bike and across the country in like an hour or something crazy like that about energy. And as I'm reading his book, he mentions that his daughter did improv at Second City.
Oh, wow.
And I, what do you, seriously, you knew that I did it. I got a book about improv. I love improv. And I don't remember why he said he never thought about telling me. So I contacted her and asked if I could interview her. I have never met her face to face. And she just blew me away. I mean, she gets it. She gets how improv is a tool to use with leadership and communication and everything that we do in business, but just came at it, just knocked it right out of the park. I mean, I had goosebumps.
That's great. That's really cool. I'll have to go back and listen to that. So
yeah, that was long.
Just to wrap up, you're a CPA.
Yes.
You talk to a lot of folks about the profession. What does the future of this profession look like to you? I mean, we've heard all kinds of horror stories about jobs disappearing and robots doing all of our work and all this other stuff. When you sit down and think about the profession of tomorrow, what do you see?
Opportunity, but in a different way. When I'm talking to groups, I'm going, you've heard it, you've seen it, you know, technology and stuff. If you don't think it's here, then you're not paying attention.
Right.
You know, artificial intelligence is here. Blockchain is here. 2 years ago, when I heard blockchain, I thought it was an intestinal disorder. now it's being written up everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I made this one prediction that a couple of years ago that within 5 years, Excel will be extinct. I had people, you know, that's blasphemy. At the rate we're going, we still have to be technically sound. That's sure. First and foremost. But what we need to be doing is learning these new skill sets that go along the lines of communication skills, that in order for us to be able to take this information and deliver it to that audience, to that client, to the organization in a manner that everybody can understand, to be that advisor, as Amy Vedder, the cherished advisor.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that the more that we're articulate, the more that we can raise curiosity, the more that we can communicate and deliver a message where everybody can understand, that's where this profession is going to. In my opinion, we've made a lot of strides in the interpersonal skills over the last few years. I believe firms and business and industry folks are getting that understanding.
Yeah.
And if you, for those who aren't, you're going to be extinct.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to invest in yourself. You got to invest in your learning, not your 40 hours of CPE a year. That's compliance based. Yeah. But you need to invest in that learning and take a public speaking course. I mean, I had a huge fear of public speaking at one time. And the more you do it, the easier it gets.
Especially if you know what you're talking about, right? And
right.
CPAs, they know their stuff. Apply a few skills that you can easily learn. They can do that stuff.
I rebranded the podcast to change your mindset, and that's really what we need to begin to do. We need to change our mindset and say, don't say we can't do that or that'll never happen. Go, what if it does? Yeah. What would this look like? Or what if this is true? And a lot of our work is going to be more, the robotic stuff is going to take care of the crunching of the numbers, but I have to deliver this information. What skills do I need in order to be successful?
Yep.
And then write them down and then make a plan and execute to it.
I love that idea that it's really about your mindset, right? Yeah. And I think you're right. I think you're right.
It's that belief. And I think with our profession a little bit, it's been kind of hard to get them to believe.
Yeah,
I remember when IFRS was coming out, and everyone, I'm not gonna pay any attention to that. It's never gonna happen. Well, it didn't happen, but it did happen.
Right.
It didn't happen because we didn't fully adopt it, and you know, I call it the new metric system in the United States, International Financial Reporting Standards. However, if you go back, especially now with the implementation of the new revenue recognition and the leasing standard, that was out of the whole IFRS bit. Mm-hmm. So we are closer to IFRS than we've ever been. So it is here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So new era, new skills, new mindset. It's going to be interesting to see how all this goes.
It will be.
It'll be fun following along with you along the way to see what you dig up next, because you've had some great insights into all of these kind of new skill sets. And best ways to apply them. And I just love the work that you're doing. So Peter, thank you. Thank you very much for joining me today and sharing some of that with us.
Bill, it's a blast. It's a little bit different that I'm on this side of the table versus that side of the table. But I've listened to the podcast, like I told you before we started. You sound great. I always enjoy our conversations. I look forward to many of them. And I want to give a thanks to Tom because he was the one that kind of got my eyes open some years ago about this change in the profession.
Yeah.
And I just went, well, what if it would? What if it does? What would this look like? And have just kind of been embraced it over the years and kind of seen where it's been. So
change your mindset and now helping others do the same. So keep fighting a good fight. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, bud.
That was Peter Margaritis, a keynote speaker, communication strategist, Business Learning Institute thought leader, and unfortunately, a fellow Cincinnati Reds fan. He's the author of two books. The first is called Improv is No Joke, Using Improvisation to Create Positive Results in Leadership and Life. And his second and latest book is called Taking the Numb Out of Numbers, Explaining and Presenting Financial Information with Confidence and Clarity. You can find out more at petermargaritis.com. And don't forget to listen to Peter's podcast. It's a good one. And not just because I've been a guest on it a couple of times. It's called Change Your Mindset. You'll find it on his website, on iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts.